back to another episode of Beckham's Basement. We are hitting the year off with a banger here. We had the transfer episode just last week talking about the traitor that is Trent Alexander-Arnold on his way to Real Madrid. He is going to sign a massive contrato with Los Blancos. And we have really not a lot of movement otherwise. You know, we're still waiting on Nick. There was the scene where apparently Salah positioned Trent beside him for that free kick on purpose to flip off Liverpool's front office. I mean, there are people grabbing for things that just, I mean, you got to, I mean, talk about things that aren't there. I didn't, you were here. We watched the match, you, me, and Tim, or whatever. Is it grammatically? Is it you, Tim, and I? I don't know. I can always claim that I grew up in Germany. It's not my first language. So yeah. The three of us, the three stooges, watched the Liverpool Man United match, and there was this there was a tweet afterwards, or an X, I guess you can call it now, thanks to the very ugly idiot that is Elon Musk. They said that Salah did that on purpose, that Trent was never taking the kick, but he wanted to. It's either all of us or none of us. So I was like, well, Trent's already told Liverpool to go fuck off.
Yeah.
Everything I have read, everything I've heard, that any contract that Liverpool Football Club puts in front of him, he's like, you can pay me £1 million a week. I'm not going to sign. I do not like the Reds. I am not with you anymore. I am going to be Los Blancos. I'm going to go there, fail. I'll be West Ham in 2 years. I'll be begging Slot to come back. He's going to tell me the door's right there. You walked out of it. There's no entry back in. Yada, yada, yada. But I just saw that scene as just – they were just deciding – it was two players deciding on who's going to take the free kick. Apparently, though, Nick, it was a message.
Yeah, people will grab at anything. I mean, I saw somebody was saying – Salah said something about this is – he's going to give it all this year, so people are implying that this is his last year at Liverpool, and I'm like, that's not what he was saying at all.
Well, if Patrick Ewing says he wants to eat a pastrami sandwich, it means he's going to come back and play for the Knicks for one last dance at age 61. You know, he never did win that elusive ring over Michael Jordan. So, you know, Ewing – Jordan hadn't been in the league now for almost 30 years. This has been your chance, bro. Like, this has been your chance. And imagine 61-year-old Patrick Ewing eating that pastrami sandwich while playing for these New York Knickerbockers that are third place in the Eastern Conference and have it wide open. I mean, I'm just grabbing at something too, Nick. I'm going to grab at stuff too. I'm going to – if Ronaldo's picking his nose in Saudi Arabia, it means he's going to MLS.
Yeah.
I got to grab stuff, Nick, because we're going to grab at things. This is a grab bag episode, but what were your impressions of that? I mean, you obviously think it's BS too, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, I think people just grab at anything, man. I mean, Liverpool are gonna do incredible things this year. I don't see them not. I mean, I don't pay attention when there's two legs to something. I don't pay attention to the first leg ever. Barcelona taught us that lesson against PSG. I think they're going to have a great season, and no matter what they do at the end of the season and in the middle of the season, right now in this very present, they're doing very well. And I don't pay much attention to the nonsense. I feel a lot of people just grab and reach for things just to make themselves feel better. Living in America, I mean, we've seen it all with egg ball and basketball. I mean, we've seen free agency stuff happen. Weird stuff happen all the time, man. I mean, God, just look at the decision. I mean, that's a free agency shit show. So
Yeah. We've
seen it all, man. I don't put much into who takes a free kick and who's taking the penalty and who's taking this and that. I think Trent, just like you said, Trent's going. He has never indicated that he's going to be staying. Salah has not said anything negative about staying at Liverpool. I think he's staying, and I think Virgil will too. I think we'll have two more years with those guys. I agree with you, man. I don't put much into that. I think it's all nonsense, and people are reaching for the stars.
Well, my thought is this, literally. Nick. You know, and we're not going to talk about. We're just following up on last week's episode transfers, just to point it out, because we're going to talk about something even bigger this week. But it was the fact that if really Salah wanted to go, there's allegedly a deal sitting on his agent's desk for 400,000 quid a week to go to Paris Saint-Germain. And look, if it's all about money for you, and it's all about, but you know, first of all, if you sign that deal, PSG right now, as it stands, will miss the knockout stage of the Champions League. So beyond, and this is what Mbappe had to face, right? So beyond the French league title, which literally at this point means absolutely a box of matches in the United States or a Whopper with cheese that you can get at any drive-thru at Burger King or, you know, the basic dog food you can find at PetSmart. It's literally the value of that. The French league title, unless you're Lille, unless you're Monaco, that means something because you took down the blood oil money tyrants that are PSG with a squad that was one-tenth the budget. So that means that you actually did something. So 2017 Monaco, 2021 Lille? You guys, hats off to you because you shouldn't have even been close to it. So that's another failing on PSG. That's an even bigger thing was when you don't win the French league title that, I mean, just really, but Salah, he could be gone. He could have already signed it. He's open right now. He could say, okay, well, you know, Liverpool had their chance. I'm going to get paid 50,000 quid a week more to go play. But why, if that's not the case, because the PSG has tried it. They've tried it with Messi. They've had Neymar. They've had Mbappe. They've had Di Maria. They've had Ibra. They've had every single player, Belotti. They've had, look, who do you need to win the Champions League? Salah's not going to do it at 32 by himself.
No.
Last year, semifinal, how many times have we talked about this? Literally laid out for them. All you have to do is beat little minnow Borussia Dortmund. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. They're fifth place in the Bundesliga. It shouldn't be that hard. Leverkusen's beating them. Bayern's beating them. Augsburg beats them. You mean to tell me that PSG can't beat a club that Augsburg can beat?
Yeah.
The answer to that, Nick, is no, they can't. No, they didn't, and no, they can't. And not only did they get beat, they didn't score a single goal, Nick, in two legs.
Yeah.
Not a single goal.
Yeah, no.
So why would Salah go to a club that has proven on the European continent, not in France, but on the European continent, they are the ultimate losers. They are the ultimate bottlers. Just to go for money. At Salah's age, 32 going on 33, it has to be more than just about money. The man's rich. It's not like he's going to go broke when he leaves Liverpool the next week because he didn't sign that 400,000 pound a week deal with PSG. He's getting 350 from Liverpool. If you can't live off 350,000 British pounds a week, then we need to have talks with your financial advisor and curtail your spending because that's ridiculous. But the major point is here, he could have already gone, Nick. He could have already left last week. The deal was there. All you got to do is put ink to pen. Pen to paper, ink to paper. And he didn't do it. He hasn't done it yet. Now, when he does it, if he does it, then I'll stand corrected. Then it was all about the money. It's not about what Slot's going to do from this season or in the future because that Liverpool team is set up for years to come. I mean, you know, you've got a young midfield that is extremely talented. Gravenberch out of nowhere becomes one of the top number sixes on the planet.
Yeah,
you have Jota, who is Mr. Super Sub, and if you can start him and he stays healthy, he can be just that, a super starter. You've got Diaz, you can sell as an asset if you want to. You got Nunez, you can sell as an asset if you want to. Gakpo is playing out of his mind right now. Where else do we go? I mean, you've got McAllister, you've got Szoboszlai, you've got, if you want to, you could bring in Harvey Elliott. I mean, you look at PSG, the roster doesn't compare, which is probably why they are 25th or whatever it is in the table right now in the Champions League. That's because they're not as good as they have been. So I just think people are reaching and grabbing, and they just want something to talk about, negative, positive, neutral. And so the next time, Nick, that you see Salah going to lunch with Trent, that means that Pluto and Jupiter will align. The gravitational pull will suck Earth into a black hole, and football as we know it will exist only in a black hole on a planet called Nugulata.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah, no, so absolutely.
No more sandwiches for Trent and Salah. That's not allowed. They can't go to lunch together.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I it's exactly that, man. When Jupiter and Saturn align, Trent takes a dump at 10 a.m. and Salah scratches his head, and the third moon of the year. I mean, that's what people reach for, man. It's absolute nonsense, man. And I agree, man. Liverpool are deep enough to where losing Trent, I think, you know, I feel like Trent and Alisson are two guys. I mean, dude, I meant to send you a clip of Alisson yesterday.
Oh boy.
I meant to send you a clip. He was trying to be fancy with the football in the back, and sure enough, a Tottenham guy was behind him, ran up behind him, stole the ball. And because Pedro Porro can't kick a fucking ball, he's a defender in his defense, they did not score a goal. But boneheads like Trent and boneheads like Alisson can go. And Liverpool, it could be doing them a favor, to be honest. I mean,
the only downside to it is, Nick, they're not going to get any financial compensation for Trent. But they will get the wages back. So, yeah, it frees up them to sign a right back who's actually competent and can defend. And I think, honestly, that guy already is on the roster. I've been a huge supporter of Connor Bradley. I think you need to start benching Trent, give him playing time, get him up to speed. That's the guy you say, okay, you're not coming back. You're not coming back. You don't want to play ball with Liverpool. You don't want to win trophies here in England. That's fine. Go to Spain. Fail. Come crawling back. Be a Bournemouth player in 2 years on loan because Real Madrid can't stand the sight of you because you suck. And then you bring Connor Bradley up to speed and you let that young man dominate the right side of the pitch. He can be an inverted fullback. He can be a straight fullback. He can defend. He can pass. He cannot pass and do set pieces at the rate of Trent Alexander-Arnold, and I'm not saying, but he's an all-around better player. Or you go buy somebody, you know, young and cheap, whatever, you can reinvest that, you can reinvest the wages. But the point of the matter is that you're right. I do believe they could be doing Liverpool a favor. It's addition by subtraction. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I certainly will not miss Trent at all. He played a piss poor game on Sunday against United. I mean, he was in full. I'm surprised he didn't get boos at Anfield when the ball touched his boot. I was surprised to kind of hear that the supporters haven't quite turned on him yet. But it'll come in due time. It's still early. It's January.
Yeah,
have to ink the deal first, right?
Yeah, they. I don't even think any. I mean, they're just. What I'm seeing is they're just still talking, like it's still being discussed, personal details and all that shit. But I mean, I agree with you. I don't understand. I feel like he should have gotten some boos and things should have happened because he really didn't play that. He didn't play a good match. I mean, he was not at his best, and everyone saw that. I mean, And he came on yesterday in the 60th, and I'm pretty sure there wasn't any. I want to say that fans were pretty pissed even then. I mean, I know it was an away game, but yeah, nothing's positive right now, man. I mean, I did hear, you know, I know we don't put much into the energy drink cup, but every time Liverpool steps foot in Tottenham, someone always fucks him, and you know who it is. It's the referees, man. And it happened again yesterday. Guy should have gotten a second yellow on a bad slide tackle to Tsimikas. Tsimikas goes off the pitch to get fixed up. The guy who should have got the yellow runs down the field and scores the goal. And they get absolutely shafted. Now, granted, in the big picture, we both know at Anfield, Tottenham will have a hard time closing this out, but they should have never even been down 1-0 in the energy drink cup.
I don't care about the Carabao Cup. I've told you I care more about Adam. Well, we won't go with what I said, but you know what I said. Him doing that with a moose, than the Carabao Cup. But no, Spurs will not win in Anfield. It will be ugly. Maybe 4-1, 5-2. And yeah, Liverpool will advance to the final. No big deal. I mean, it's 1-0 at Hotspur Stadium. in a cup that means as much as the actual energy drinks that I have in my fridge right now. That it's yeah. At the end of the day, when I drink it, it's an empty aluminum can and a trash can.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, it's like I said, it's the trophy that Klopp won last year. So they, you know, he's already even in really not even trying, he still wins trophies that Arteta can't win, and no one even talks about it because it's the size. Honestly, Nick, the trophy's the size of this cleaning bottle. It's like it looks. You see this right here? Look at that.
Yeah,
it's the size of this like total interior cleaner and protectant dash glass and navigation for your car.
Yeah,
it like you have to kind of hold it a certain way to make it look more prestigious, because if you grab it with both hands, it looks like you're holding a cereal bowl.
Yeah, no,
it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. They need to abolish it. It needs to be FA Cup, Premier League, and whatever European competition you're in, just like in Germany. Who else does it that way? Is it Spain?
Well, Spain. Spain yeah, just has yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
these two cups, the Coupe de France, and then France does two, England does two, Italy does the Supercoppa plus the Coppa Italia. It's just it's ridiculous. It's too many games. They added on games to the Europa League. They added on games to Conference League. They added on games to Champions League. So with that being said, the top teams are playing so many more games than the mid table teams and the bottom teams, and especially your you know second division, third division teams. Or second, third tier. Just get rid of it. Like no one cares, unless you're Arsenal, then you probably care. But
yeah,
but then Arsenal will make fun of people for winning it.
Yeah, no, I know it's
weird.
It's like a catch-22, man. I mean, we talk about it, not much. I mean, not as much as you used to. I mean, once I know, both of us kind of don't really care about much. We don't speak much about it. But I feel if you're not on the path of winning four or five trophies, then it's totally pointless. I mean, even though it's really, you know, we talked about just the FA Cup, Champions League, and the domestic being the treble. I feel if you're not on that route to just add one more to the shelf that year, then who the hell cares about it? It's absolutely nonsense, man. Germany and Spain got it figured out. I think Paris has two also. It's really stupid. Coupe de Throne and the Coupe de France or something. They're like England. They're idiots.
Yeah, Coupe
too,
de France
so.
Is they have that one, the Cup of France. But yeah, just to give it perspective, like it's played, the finals played in February, and it, you know, I would trade that. You and you know, like Nick, you know, I mean, you know, that I worship Jurgen Klopp. I mean, he's on my wall. I mean, the guy, I have his book. I have like the guy is to me he is a saint. He's Saint Jurgen to me, and I could not care less that he wanted to, like people talk about Arteta winning trophies. Like Klopp won one last year, and I'm like, well, he didn't win any either.
Yeah,
but he did on paper. But it's such a whatever trophy that it's like I have to like struggle to remember it that he won it, because I'm like, and we watched the final, you and me. Who was it? Was it Steven that watched it with us?
No, I think that I'm not sure if he was there for that one. Me and you watched the one where it was the kids and it went to Chelsea. It went to extra time and they won in like the 110th minute.
I think it was you. I think Steven watched it with us. I think it was
it. I just remember the kids. Yeah, we were watching kids play.
Yeah, and they still won. They still beat Chelsea.
Yes.
But
yes.
the thing is it's just one of those trophies that like what it's whatever. But yeah, I don't want to spend too much more time on it. It's just it's ridiculous. And you know, we've segued into this topic with trophies, but let's segue into another one. So we wanted to focus a little bit on tactics. Tactics, are they overrated? Are they, you know, do they get more play than they should? Do they get, you know, we talk about, you know, some of the tactical innovators of their times, Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp's heavy metal football. And there's only, I really do think, Nick, that there's a limitation to what you can do. You can say, okay, I'm going to play with a high line and I'm going to press high, and that's going to be heavy metal football. Gegenpressing, transitional, you can do a transitional football like they do in Germany a lot of times, which is called Umschaltfußball, which is where you play deep and you basically have players that you purchase to fit a system where you counterattack, which is just basically wing play, quick long balls, streak down, which is why you see teams a lot of times that play high, like Dortmund, they can get beat by a team like Augsburg because Augsburg will lie deep. they'll have a turnover in possession with Dortmund, and then I'm sorry, singling Dortmund out because it happens a lot.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, a team with 33% possession for the game ends up winning 2-1 because they get, and what's funny is Dortmund will get 25 shots and score one goal, and Augsburg will get 3 shots and score 2 because the shots that they created, 2 of them were one-on-ones versus the keeper, and the keeper can't keep it out because he's in a compromised position. So there's those tactics, right? I mean, anybody can park the bus. That's literally anybody can do that, right?
But, absolutely.
You know, there's you have Los Blancos that will gladly give you possession. You can have 55-60% of it, but they'll still score 4. Barcelona loves control, pace, tempo, small passes, tiki-taka. But let's just talk about, are they – we just watched a video, Nick, that basically explained how what of a genius Pep Guardiola is. And for 88 minutes, Manchester – this is specifically the Manchester City versus Manchester United match – what was it, 6-7 weeks ago when they played? And or maybe no, it wasn't that long ago. Maybe
no,
maybe
it wasn't that long. Yeah, 2-3 weeks ago, four, something weeks. Like that. Yeah.
So Guardiola, basically his weak link is Bernardo Silva because he doesn't have the pace, but everyone else has this certain role that he's trying to exploit the weaknesses of United. Well, Amorim counters this by forcing Pep into formations that on the defensive he doesn't like to be in. So there's a lot of space created, but specifically for Amad Diallo, who was able in the second, once they went down 1-0, which it was 1-0 for a long time up until the 88th minute, I believe. Well, then Diallo started taking risks, and they exploited the gap in the back line or in the defensive third on that side of the pitch that City was leaving open. And then Diallo was able to go in, and then they score, they get a penalty, and then they get a go-ahead goal, and then it ends 2-1. Also, the fact that Nunez's pass, back pass, was terrible. So, great. So, these tactics, Nick, we just talked about it. Like, a great tactic that works for 88 minutes can be undone by one bad pass, one penalty, and one breakaway. And that all happens in a span, mind you, of 5 minutes. So, 88 minutes of greatness can be undone by 5 minutes of, two of those were your own blunder. And one of them that United, okay, we finally got ourselves an opportunity, and they made the most of it. But, Nick, we're talking about tactics. At this point, and we've heard Slot, talk about how he dissected United at Old Trafford 3-0, what he saw, the weaknesses that he exploited. But honestly, you have to fall into that. You have to fall into that. If anything, you would say if it's a really great tactic, Then the opposing manager should be able to recognize said tactic and then come out and adjust. It would be a chess play, a counter to your counter, right? So we've seen everything from 2-7-2s with Thiago Motta to going back to the 1960s with Inter Milan. We've seen the Catenaccio, that was a tactic which is very boring, 1-0 football, anti-football, if you will. And that's sort of the school that Jose Mourinho subscribed to for a long time, was the 1-0 death, beat you to death, sort of monotonous type of play, but effective because he purchased the players through Inter and Real Madrid and Chelsea that he needed to get to execute those. Your John Terry's, Frank Lampard, those type of players, right? So my question is tactical innovation dead at this point, Nick? Have we seen everything there is to see? Is there any what more can be done, really? You can have formations. You can do a 3-1-1-1-4-1, or I don't know where you go from here, but we've seen, with Amorim, so let's just talk about him for a second, because it's he has said under no certain terms that the personnel for Manchester United are 100% not set to play his 3-4-2-1 that he likes to play. But he is still going to do it no matter what. Yeah. So even though the manager knows the players that he currently has on the roster cannot execute his game plan to the level of which he expects, he is still going to force a round peg in a square hole.
Yeah.
Is that smart? Should he adjust? Should he maybe go to a 4-man back line like Ten Hag used, because that's what you actually are suited for? So it's the whole thing is, Nick, our tactics complete bullshit, because You can use a tactic that is that your players literally are the opposite to execute and win with 5 minutes of just two boneheaded city plays and one breakaway for you. While Pep, on the other hand, 10 of 11 of his players actually are suited for the tactic. You know, we talked about this. This is the thing. They're always going to play the ball to Doku because Doku can beat any player. I don't care who you are. One-on-one, Doku will dribble around you and he will fuck up. He will inevitably either shoot the ball 10 meters over the goal, he will cross it and miss his man, or he will dribble out of bounds. But he will get past you. 1,000% he will get past you. But he can't finish. But that's the way they went on that left wing for the majority of the game against United. They do it against Liverpool. They do it against, they don't care who it is. They do that. But in this particular instance, they were trying to exploit the opposite side of the pitch where Bernardo Silva was, but he didn't have the pace to get behind. But you don't have anybody else at that time, City, with all the injuries, who can plug in that position that could do it as effectively as Silva can in defense and the buildup and all that stuff. He just can't get around the last person in the line to get to the space that he needed to. So that's the one weak link. But 10 of the 11 players, Nick, were executing their roles perfectly. Doku, Haaland, De Bruyne, you know, it was, they had Guardiola doing a certain thing. He would come up into the midfield and act as a second pivot next to Gundogan. But then, Nick, it all falls apart.
Yeah. Yeah, with one pass and one Diallo burn through, you know, they got a shot on goal and it goes in. I watched the video and I saw what he was trying to do, making the space with, I think it was Diaz or Nunez. The Portuguese guy trying to make space on the one side of the pitch. And we saw what happened as United just ended up getting those goals and actually just making the tactics totally pointless. I mean, Amorim's a good manager, man. What he did at Braga and then the Sporting to get them their first title in, I think, 20 or 30 years was incredible. But he had the personnel to run his system. And I don't know, man. I kind of, if I were a United fan, I don't know if I would mind. I mean, we talk about this a lot because me and you both say, why not take 3 years of pain to become good again? And just suck it up and take the banter for a few years. Well, now it's been, what, 10 or 15 years, they've been absolute crap, and they're still taking banter because they don't want to just suck it up, get rid of players, and find the right personnel. Well, it looks like finally that's what they might do with Amorim. They're finally letting him play his system. No one's talking shit, really, you know? And
Let me ask you this, though. There's so many elements to this. Honestly, this could be like a 3-part episode, honestly, because I've always said tactics have a ceiling on innovation. There's only so much you can do with 11 players on a pitch. I do believe that certain systems fit certain managers better. That's where they're going to operate. Where the brilliance is if you are a guy like Arne Slot that can come in with Jurgen Klopp's exact same roster and fine tune it to maybe see something that Jurgen didn't see. And just have a more, you know, a baseline approach as to saying, well, we're playing heavy metal football no matter what. We're going to gegenpress. We're going to play a high line. We're going to cause problems in your defensive half where your possession is key. If you lose the possession, we will strike and pounce upon you. The problem with that is if you don't have a pacey center back, if you don't have right backs and left backs that can get back in time, the long ball over the top with a run off the last defender's shoulder, in this case of someone with pace, Marcus Rashford, Kylian Mbappe, that type of player, even as bad as Rashford is, you can't take away the fact he's a fast human being, and he will absolutely beat Virgil van Dijk in a foot race without even, if you strap lead to his legs, he'd still beat Virgil. So now you have an opportunity, if you're United in this case, where it's Rashford versus Alisson one-on-one. Well, given Alisson, we know what the hell that's going to end up as. So he'll probably try to do a bicycle kick himself into his own goal, since he likes to be fancy. My point is this. Do you value individual greatness over tactical philosophy? If I Can I, because it's the thing, if I take a City team that has all this talent, can a Brighton team with one-tenth the budget and a park the bus mentality beat me? Is it because there's no tactical approach by, and I'm just, I don't mean to pick on Brighton, but I could go Luton, I could go Ipswich, any one of those, you know. Brighton's obviously a lot better than those teams, but I'm just saying, like, and they're much more attacking now, but I just name them, Brentford, Fulham, whoever. Fulham's, I know they're more attacking too, but anyways, just someone that's not on City's level, not a Liverpool, yeah, not a Chelsea, you know, Arsenal, those clubs. So is that, it's so funny. We're talking about having 88 minutes of tactical brilliance undone by 5 minutes of stupidity, right?
Yeah.
So in that case, then, is that tactical, is it overrated? Because United, Amorim wasn't doing anything. Those players were kind of just, everybody knows that in chemistry, or physics, every action has a reaction. Well, if City's doing something, City does X, then United's going to do Y. That's just how it is, right? Yeah. What you want to do is, what Slot talks about is, when you do Y, then I exploit Z. X, Y, and now Z.
Yeah.
Right? So, but the fact is that the problem is that Guardiola's Z was Doku down the wing and Silva up the middle. Silva doesn't have the pace, and Doku just doesn't have the finishing ability.
Yeah.
So therein lies the problem, because your service to Haaland is cut off now. And I mean, you know, City, United's going to sit back with their back four, and every time a cross is coming in from Doku, either watch it go out of bounds or head it away. That's just how it is, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing. Do you value, if you're starting a club, are you purchasing for tactical philosophy or individual greatness?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because you can look at managers like, say, Jose, and if you don't get, you know, his players to match that tactical, his tactical ideas, then you might have to rely on the individual greatness, or getting someone like a Ronaldo or Messi. That's a hard one, man, because depending on the club and the tactics, you know, it can be quite a conundrum. Because look at what Amorim's doing. He's tactically smart in what he does with his formation, but United's not given, or not yet at least, they don't have the players now to do that. So they're kind of relying on individual greatness right now, because tactically that formation isn't working, as we've seen. You know, they've been relying on winning by individual moves, like Diallo. I mean, he took over that game, man. Individually, the last 10 minutes, he won that match for United. And was that tactical? No, that was not tactical. I mean, that was him doing that on his own. Right, we watched it, right or wrong. I mean, he took over that game on his own. So me personally, man, I mean, I would kind of want to be tactically kind of sound, but yet still have that individual greatness, because sometimes, like you said, tactics don't fucking matter, man. I mean, we've seen games where they'll go up and down the pitch, and we'll see chance after chance, and then we'll see a game like Inter Milan and Napoli where it's anti-football, you know? Napoli played tactics where it was sit back, get the ball, goes in, kick it down the pitch, let Inter Milan come back in. Now, that is not fun to watch, and they call it anti-football. Even the commentator was like, holy shit, man, I hope Inter Milan wins just because the way Napoli's playing. But, you know, sometimes that can get you the victories, and we see Napoli's in the top three right now, and it kind of asks, what kind of football do you want, you know? I don't know, man. What I would like to see and what kind of works is two different things, you know. I kind of like the star power and whatnot, but yet sometimes the tactical stuff does work, man. I mean, what Klopp did with the 4-3-3 was absolutely incredible. The years they, I mean, 100 points. I mean, the team was absolutely incredible that year. And do we credit that to individual greatness or to his tactics, you know?
I don't know that that is actually tactics in the.
Yeah, that's why I ask. Yeah, you don't.
Jurgen Klopp's tactics, honestly, are not hard to figure out. And
no,
they, and I mean
the most used formation, but yet they could not be stopped.
Right. Well, here's so there's an element in this called team chemistry.
Yeah.
Team chemistry. So you have a front three.
Could we call it team chemistry or individual greatness, or was it team greatness?
That's team greatness because, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because you have a guy, you have at that time, and this is where we talk about individuals, right? Individuals. So a guy that a lot of people, and I feel like he never got the respect that he deserved. And God, you hear Jurgen Klopp talk about him, and it's like he's the best box-to-box midfielder on the planet. But you're talking about guys like N'Golo Kanté, those guys, they got the recognition during that time frame. But you never heard anybody outside of Liverpool circle, certainly, and maybe England to a certain extent, talk about Gini Wijnaldum. The guy was absolutely world effing class.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And people were like, he's just your average slow-paced midfielder, like, but if you look at what he actually did, now Jurgen Klopp's giving him a role and saying you need to play this role, and that's why Liverpool after the season he left fell off so much, because they didn't have a direct Gini replacement. They struggled to find that until they brought in Sobo and McAllister, right? And that they're now in that situation now where they've got those replacements, but. That was the link up to the front three, and you had a front three where Jurgen simply said to Firmino, "You're a false nine. Your first task is going to be to pass, find Salah Mane, and your second task is going to be to get in the box, create chaos, and score." There's the goal that he scored off the back of his heel. That's not a tactic. That's individual. Yeah. That's individual greatness. That's not it. I mean, that's just him. That's just Firmino making chicken salad out of chicken. You know what? I mean, that's just what it is.
Yeah.
But that's how in sync that front three was.
Yeah.
Mane, Salah. I mean, you got to think, man. Chemistry is not developed in the game. It's not. It's developed on the training grounds. Chemistry is developed on the training grounds. So if they're what was it at the time? Melwood. They were training at. At the training facility at Melwood, that's where those three got the chemistry. So I don't say it's not individual greatness. It's Mane, Salah, and Firmino being completely as one person, three people in the same brain.
Yeah.
Now you can have Mbappe, a better front three, Nick, on paper, Neymar, Mbappe, and Messi.
Yeah.
Name me a better front three. You will never find a better front three on paper. That is absolute elite talent.
Yeah, it's
and
cheating.
They didn't win jack.
Nah, yeah.
The French league title, and as I just said, is as worth much as that bag of Truvia over there.
Yeah.
If you're PSG. Sorry, I should put an asterisk next to it. If you're Lille, Monaco, well done, sir.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But no, they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. They didn't have chemistry. There's no chemistry. But if you say on FC25, I'm playing you in an online match, and you've got Salah, Mane, and Firmino versus Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar. I should destroy you.
Yeah,
but we don't play video games, Nick, in real life.
No.
We play real football with real humans.
Yeah, this is real. Yeah.
So I think that you can. I think to a basic extent, you can have a philosophy. Jurgen Klopp, Amorim. Ten Hag, because here's the thing, Nick. Ten Hag, okay, this is a great example. This is a great, God, we stumbled on this one, and we've talked about him enough. Listen, Eric Ten Hag was deemed a genius at Ajax. They said, this is probably, outside of Mourinho's credentials, obviously, Mourinho's trophy case is second to none, but outside of the Mourinho, that's the best hire United's made post-Ferguson. Because they're like, Ten Hag took an Ajax team that he developed, that he built, and they executed his quote-unquote tactics to perfection. And they got to a Champions League semifinal where they almost made it to the final. They won the Dutch league, the Eredivisie, by like 50 points or something. And yeah. So I was honestly, as a Liverpool supporter, I'll be honest with you, Nick, when they hired him, I was like, they made it. They might have gotten this one right.
Yeah.
They might have gotten this one right. And then I'm going to bring in and introduce to you a second element into all of this that I want you to consider and that I want your take on. Tactics are great. Yeah, okay. I do think that the innovation is dead. I don't think there's much more you can do unless you want to play a 1-6-3 or a 3-6-1, or you just want to fuck around with the formations. That's fine. You know, Thiago Motta did that. Was it Bologna? 2-7-2?
Yes.
I mean, okay. There's so many combinations of 10 players in the outfield I can give you. I can give you 1-9. I can give you a 9-1. I can give you a 1-8-1. Whatever. I mean, it's just that part of it does play a major factor, because what you're doing with that is you're creating mismatches. You're trying to overload. You're trying to.
Yeah, you're making space.
Create an overload on one side, or you can try and what you're trying to do is create a mismatch or overload in the midfield, which then leads to the other team having to be very careful about how they attack you and counters and stuff like that, because you know the midfield is where the game is really won or lost, if we're all being truthful with each other.
Yeah,
but I want to introduce this element to you, Nick. All the talent in the world, the best tactics in the world, I do value, and this is where Jurgen Klopp, and I think Arne Slot is actually doing it as good as, if not better. I am shocked. But this is where you have to be elite, in my opinion, in order to truly be an A-plus manager, and that is man management.
Yeah.
Do your players subscribe to the bullshit coming out of your mouth?
Yeah.
Or are you just a bag of hot air?
No, that you have to be a good man manager. If you're not, you're going to end up with people like Rashford, who was 2-3 years ago, you could have sold him for 100 mil. Now the guy is worth a bag of peanuts and they can't get rid of him. No one wants to pick up his contract. Now,
let me ask you this. Would Rashford have succeeded at Jose Mourinho's Inter?
I think he actually could, because I think Jose would have told him to shut up. He would have made rules. Think about it. I mean, the guy had talent, did he not? He was talented.
Absolutely. I'm not taking
he
that
He had
away
the
from
talent.
Him.
He had the pace. I mean, the guy was quick.
Sebastian Telfair also had talent.
That is true, but he was also not managed, I feel, as a player. I think definitely Rashford could have been something great, but because of the bad man management and the bad management at United, now the guy's going to go to AC Milan and fizzle out and end up, you know, at Verona or something.
So he'll be the next Tammy Abraham. He'll be the next Origi.
Yeah, because Tammy's banging in goals at Roma or something.
Well, Divock Origi directly went from the Premier League to AC Milan, so that's a direct comparison. But no, go ahead with your man management, because mentioned Rashford, and I wanted to ask you that: would Rashford have succeeded at a manager such as Jose Mourinho at prime Inter that won the treble?
Because
you got to think now. This is a manager, Jose Mourinho. Man management, Nick. Man management. This is why I bring this up. It is so key, and I'm going to give you a prime example. Jose Mourinho said, "We have got to get rid of Zlatan Ibrahimovic." At the time, possibly the best number nine in the world.
Yes.
Inter had the best number nine in the world, and Jose said, "We have got to get rid of him."
Yeah.
They get rid of him to Barca. They bring in Samuel Eto'o. They then move Diego Milito to that spot. Who Milito, talent-wise, is nowhere near Zlatan. It's not even close. But man management. Zlatan, you can't get through to him. He's Borat, right? Me, Zlatan, do what Zlatan think. I do what I want. I am who I am. Okay, great. That's maybe Borat was a bad example. Borat's an idiot. But anyways, you get my point. They based the character in the Ted Lasso season 3 off of Zlatan. That's just like Zlatan do what Zlatan want. You know, it's a parody now. It's kind of funny, but I know that if you're an Inter fan at that time, a supporter, which I was, it's frustrating, because you know that you have this guy, and at the end of the day, if there's a pass to be made, to a player that's cutting in or whatever. You know, if Maicon's coming down the wing, you're like, well, I'm not passing to him. I'm Zlatan. I'm going to take on three defenders by myself. And that's where Milito was like, no, I'm going to – that transaction is what got Inter the treble. It's what got them to beat the great Bayern, the indestructible Bayern, 2-0 in the Champions League final. And it cemented Jose as one of the greatest managers to ever play to ever manage the game, period, going back to the beginning of time to current day. It's why he's the great one, the special one, whatever you want to call him. But that had to be done, Nick. So I asked you, how important is man management, all of this? You got this tactical philosophy, then you've got team chemistry, but man management. Jurgen Klopp was the master of man management. And that's where they say, actually, Nick, Pep is not. Some of Pep's former players don't even like him. They can't stand him because he has these demands that are so rigid. And we've watched scenarios, Nick, where he has made players 15 times worse after coming to City than they were before City. I will name you Exhibit A, Jack Grealish. Okay? And there's more, but that's the biggest offender, right? That's the biggest offender. How important is man management in all of this?
I mean, I think it's essential, dude. You absolutely fall apart and crumble if you're not managing your guys. I mean, I'm telling you, the Rashford example is absolutely great. Because you had a guy who could have been everything, and next thing you know, he's in Turkey in Belstaff or wherever, partying and then flying to a game against Everton, you know? Because there's not a manager there who's saying, no, you're going to be in your fucking house and you're going to be at this on these grounds at 7 a.m. the next day. I think the man management has got to be one of the most important. You're going to have the guys not – who the fuck's going to listen to you? Think about it. You have Jose come in and those players are going to be zoned in and they're going to listen. You have someone like Ten Hag come in and they're going to be on their phone jerking off in the corner because they know he's not going to say anything. I mean, you can look at Eggball managers and say the same thing. I say managers, coaches.
Yeah.
You had the offensive coordinator for Ohio State now went to the Eagles and tried to overman manage, and then no one listened to him.
Well, there's the Chip Kelly example too, how he destroyed the Philadelphia
Eagles.
That's
what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You're talking about current Ohio State OC, right?
Yes.
The time he was the Oregon Ducks head coach. Yes. So yes. He was coming off of a national championship game and big time pickup for the Eagles. They thought. And then he comes in and starts telling Deshaun Jackson, you got to tie your shoes a certain way. And it's like,
yeah,
dude,
you can't wear black socks.
Who the hell are you?
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to give you an example, though, of man management. And it's the only example I can think of. It's funny because you just sent me a video last night. And I mean, look, I probably would have thought of this guy because we're on the topic anyway. But I've only known, if you can find me someone else, Nick, then please do. I've only known of one player that I can think of. Now, there may be more. So that's why I say, go through your Rolodex, go through your database in your head and find me one. Where? In any, so take the top five big sports in the world. So we'll call it, American football, the global football, baseball, hockey, and basketball, okay? In all those five sports, I can only think of one player who could not be man-managed by the coach, so he was basically man-managed by another player or two, but would go to clubs, get hammered, come in, smell like garbage water, get you 25 rebounds and 5 points, play unbelievable defense on 2 hours of sleep, then go to the club and do it all over again, no shower, and then come into practice an hour late, eating chicken and rice.
Yeah.
And then would outrun everybody in practice on 1 hour sleep. And that was Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
And nobody messed with him because they just knew if you mess up Dennis's flow, like Rashford and Rodman differ in one specific way. Rodman destroyed, that's a bad word to use. Rodman was an absolute abuser of his body and his free time in terms of how you take care of yourself, training regimen, all this stuff, right? He would only work out when he was in the team facility. But when he was and Michael Jordan says, when he was at the facility, though, he out-hustled everybody because he knew they're not going to put up with this shit. If you don't go on the court and give us 15 boards a night, But he did it. He did it on absolute abuse of his body, drinking, drugs, partying.
Women, everything.
Orgies.
Yeah.
But when it came down to it, when he put on that Chicago Bulls jersey, that is the one guy you do not want defending you, because he would block your shot, steal your balls, 20 rebounds, 5 points, and make your life miserable. And you probably get a technical foul and get ejected because he played mind games with you. So as long as you're producing, Marcus Rashford wasn't producing. That's the difference. Nope. If Marcus Rashford went to party in Istanbul and flew back for Everton and scored a brace, no one would have said anything.
Yep, no one would have said a damn word. You're right. Absolutely.
So that's where Phil Jackson, it's the one player in history where it was almost really Michael Jordan was his babysitter to an extent. And it's because, just make sure here's the thing also, Rodman, even though he was older and even though he is not, like, he had so much respect for Michael Jordan, that's the one guy he listened to. Rashford doesn't listen to anybody.
No.
There is no respect. So he's never had, because that's the thing is, Rashford was coming in as Rooney was going off. Now, Wayne Rooney would have set his ass straight. But Wayne Rooney left United in 2016. Well, Rashford, that's right when like 17-year-old Rashford was coming in. So they didn't cross paths. That's the problem, right? And you didn't have a manager there at the time. Well, who was that? 2017 would have been Van Gaal, I think.
That was right before
Jose came in.
Jose,
2016, would have been Louis Van Gaal. So now, and I think that Jose Mourinho probably was pulling out his hair over Rashford because, like, you know, the guy, like, you see this talent. So that's the thing. I think man management gets lost in this, Nick, in the fact that, like, there's only been one player in any pro sport that I can think of. I'm sure there's been more. I'm not saying that it's limited to just Robin, but that literally was left to his own poisons. To do whatever you want to in your free time, don't sleep, drink all you want, have sex all you want with whoever you want.
Yeah.
And you come in, no shower for 3 days, and you get a 5 steals, 15 rebounds, 2 blocks, and the Bulls win by 30. I mean, that's just insane. It's insane. But there is nobody else that can do that. You have to actually be able to manage your players and put them into positions to where they succeed. And I honestly, that is the shortcoming of so many managers, Nick. It's not about – you can have great tactics. I don't think that David Moyes is an idiot. He didn't get the United job because he's an idiot. He was at Everton, and Ferguson handpicked him. You mean to tell me Alex Ferguson would handpick a moron to run United the day after he – rides off into the sunset? No way. David Moyes also went to West Ham and had a lot of success for a minute. There was a time there where the Hammers were doing where they were around top five, top seven. They were hanging around there.
Absolutely.
He's not an idiot. I don't think David Moyes is stupid. But there's man management, man. And Alex Ferguson was a king of man management. Let's talk about the great Sir Alex.
Yeah,
he
you hear it
David
all the time.
David Beckham, get the hell out of my club.
Yeah, he saw cornrows after he went to France and got drunk on a bunch of champagne. He said, David said he let someone do cornrows in his hair. He said as soon as he touched that training pitch, he called him over and said, you better take that shit out your hair. And what do you think he did?
Yeah.
Took that shit right out of his hair. Yeah.
I want you – that just your take on that as far as like – How important do you think it is? Can I go in? Am I going to be able to go in? So I'm a tactical genius. I'm the assistant manager to let's say Zidane at Real Madrid, and I'm looking for my next opportunity. And let's see, Hoffenheim gives me an opportunity. I'm gonna go to Hoffenheim, and I got these. You know, I got some players there like Kramaric. You know, he's okay. He's decent. And I'm gonna play a 3-2-5. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna play a 3-2-5. I got this tactical. I'm gonna overwhelm you in your defensive third. I'm gonna have two wingers, a second striker. You know, I'm just going crazy here, right?
Yeah.
And the next thing I know is I've drawn one and lost seven. But everyone says, well, that should work because, you know, obviously not against Bayern or maybe Leverkusen or Dortmund, but I should be able to overwhelm Mainz and I should be able to overwhelm those. But my players are running roughshod over me, man. Like they're like, we like the 4-3-3 the previous guy was using. We don't like your shit, your gimmick. 3-3-2-5 is stupid. You know, so man management, how important really is it though, Nick? I mean, is that an element that I need, or can I just say, well, if they won't listen to me, I'll just get rid of all of them and I'll replace them with players that will.
Yeah, then you're stuck with relying on your front office to bring in the right players, and then money and financial fair play come in to do, and then you're docked 60 points and sent to the bottom tier. I think if you don't immediately have control of those players, I don't want to say control. Like if you don't have their respect and their willingness to listen and kind of go into what your tactics are, because then you're just going to be screwed, man. I think it's very important. You get somebody who's lackadaisical and doesn't really, you know, manage those players very well, then you're just going to fall apart because they're going to do whatever they want. You're on, you know, think about it. If you're not a good man manager, you're on the side of the touchline telling someone to move up or get on the ball. They're not going to listen to you. I mean, I have a great example. Fucking sorry for Italy, the cigarette smoker. Yeah. Lazio.
Yeah.
Bro, he told the goalkeeper in the cup semifinal, I think it was, he said, I'm subbing you out so we can get our next keeper on to do penalties. And he was like, no, I'm not coming out. Now, do you think someone tells no to someone like Jose? Hell no.
No.
That is a good example of bad man management. The keeper stayed on the pitch. And after the game, Sarri was like, I don't know what the fuck. He didn't come off.
But they now, also lost that match. They also
Yes. They lost in penalties. And really, he probably should have taken his ass off the pitch. I mean, now, you know, hindsight's 20/20. The guy's doing okay in La Liga. But then he was absolute crap. He was the highest. They paid $80 million, the most ever on a goalkeeper, and he wouldn't even listen to his fucking manager. So I think that the man management goes hand in hand with tactical stuff, because if you don't have someone to listen to you or to manage you properly, then your tactics just mean absolute nothing. I mean, look at that example. Sarri couldn't manage his players when he wanted to make a substitution. The goalkeeper said, dude, screw you. I'm not coming out. I mean, that's a great example there.
Yeah, it's
I think it matters, man. Big time.
So one of the things that they talk about with Jose Mourinho, we'll bring him back into it, is that like at Inter and Chelsea, he knew his squad wasn't well balanced in certain areas. Yeah. So that's when you have to get your players to buy in to situationally adopt a tactic according to the situation, right? So you're like, okay, we kind of have to get through about 75 minutes of football with just not conceding. And then the other 15 minutes, depending on what I see, that's where I need my players to buy into it, right? So yeah. It wasn't always 90 minutes of dominance from a Jose side. Sometimes it was just 15 minutes where they caught you with your pants down and then it went 2-0 and they would suffocate you the rest of the time. So that is a great example of how he would get players to buy into and invest into situational football as opposed to a 90-minute tactical masterpiece.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think he's man manager number one. I mean, who did it better than him? I mean, the stories and the stuff you hear about what he did player-wise, and even getting, you know, egos like Ibrahimovic out and bringing a Samuel in, made huge differences and made Inter Milan one of the greatest sides, you know, and it goes to show you that the man management does matter. I mean, if Amorim, for example, loses the locker room, then even when you get the new players in, how are you going to get them to play the way you want them to play? I mean, you got to be boss, man. You can break it down to even our daily jobs, man. If you don't have your staff listening to you, then you're just no good, man. What good does it do if you can't get your people to listen to you to do the job that you want them to do? Now, if you do get them to listen to you, you can work towards that goal. And Jose was great at that.
Here's an interesting take for you on this. So it talks about, if you look it up, this is, you can see this, like, if what approach would you take depending on situation? If your team is not high on quality, but has grit and determination, so these are human characteristics, mind you, has nothing to do with football tactics or chemistry, but they, grit and determination is a human character trait that either you have or you don't have. You want to hustle, a la Dennis Rodman, those types of players, then, you know, that's going to be something within your own character, right? If you have grit and determination, I would go with Mourinho's approach of building a really strong base defense, very compact wing, counterattacking players, and it would take a hell of an effort to beat my team. We might not be as attractive, but we'll be super effective, and we do have chances. We'll have great chances and very high chances of winning games.
Yeah.
There you go, right?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I would want, man. I mean, you get that, then you get that balance, and you get, you know, success, man. I mean, you don't have those key things, then your recipe for disaster. Just look at United for the last, 12 years, man. I mean, they've been absolute crap. They can't figure it out. And right now they have a chance to actually change that. And we're going to see if they can. I mean, as a rival fan, me as someone who could care less about them. I mean, of course I hope they don't, but I mean, I like Amorim. You've said before he's not a bad manager.
No,
he's
not. I like him as a manager. I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his story's great. I mean, I even there was mass bandits that came into Sporting's locker room before a game and actually robbed them and beat up the striker one year. I mean, he's been through a lot, and the guy is a success story. So we want to see him do good. It's just a matter of what United's shit front office can do. So. Yeah, man, the tactics and man management is important. It's just they got to go hand in hand. You know, Klopp was a great example of that, and we talked about that. And he, man manager, Jose, man manager, and look at all the success they've had.
It's okay. So you have to be able to read the room, or in this case, the dressing room, and some. So Harry Redknapp tells this story, right, about the arm around the shoulder of the player. Some players respond to that. That's the guy that shows empathy and compassion, and it's a little bit of a softer approach, right? It gets the player to know that you've got their back, right? And then there's the Jose Mourinho approach, where he has told people, so this is a direct quote from one of his players: "When I played, it didn't bother me, but the manager sometimes got in my face and told me I was shit." So... Sorry, that is so Jose.
Yeah.
But then Jose wants that player. Here's the follow-up sentence, okay? But my reaction would be, I'll prove you wrong and show you I'm not.
Yeah.
So you have to know if your player is going to be one of those guys that's going to go out there and prove to you, because that's when the manager says, "That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to see. That fire in your belly."
Yeah.
The guy who needs the arm around the shoulder is not going to do that. He's going to crumble.
Yeah.
He's going to crumble.
Yeah, fall apart.
Fall apart. So I believe that at all of this conversation we've had, which we'll be bringing to an end here soon, but it's a three-headed dragon. You have tactics, which I think they will take you only so far. Because counter tactics can mess your tactics up. That's a chess match.
Yeah.
Man management can make your players not, or bad man management can make your players not believe.
Yeah, not give a fuck. Yeah.
And individual talent and or brilliance can make or break a tactic, depending on how radical you want to go. If you're a Jose guy and you want compactness, great defense, and quick wingers and a counter, you don't need the best individual talent. You need three or four superstars surrounded by decent talent. But if you're a guy like 2012 Barcelona or 2015-16 prime Bayern, if you want to do that tiki-taka Pep Guardiola approach, you better have elite talent at every single position on the pitch. Because if you don't, But then, because the solution is simple, right, Nick? Why doesn't Mainz do the same thing? Why doesn't Wolfsburg do the same thing?
Yeah.
It's easy, right?
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. No, yeah. You need elite talent to execute what Pep is doing, which is why they have to spend the money they do, Man City, which is why Pep can't go to a Mainz. This is the reason why Pep Guardiola, the genius, cannot go to Mainz, cannot go to Real Sociedad, cannot go to Rayo Vallecano, cannot go to Valencia, because he can't get the players he wants because they're not going to spend $100 million on Jack Grealish to drink beer. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So he's either going to get PSG, Man City, Bayern, maybe Juventus. Who am I leaving out? United? I mean, you can't go there now if you've been at City, but United's got the money to spend. Arsenal, most Premier League top six can pay Pep what he wants on wages, but that's it, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
Real Madrid and Barcelona. Those are the other two. Maybe, although, God, he would have to overhaul the whole team, but maybe Atleti, because they're so stuck in Simeone's system that it would take Pep 4 years just to undig that grave.
Oh, yeah, that would be
But I'm talking about monetary, and I'm sure that there's MLS clubs that could pay him what he wanted, but he ain't going there. So that's my point. So, Nick, that if it were so easy, then why doesn't Bochum just do Pep's system?
Yeah. No, man, I mean, that's absolutely right, and we will probably never see Pep do something like that and go to a place where you can't, you know, spend that kind of money. I just it's funny because we talk about Pep a lot just because how bad it's been recently. But if you think about it, Man City hasn't, for the last season or two, hasn't made that big splash in free agency and spent the money. And now look at Pep's tactics and what's going on. He's not able to do what he has done. Now, granted, they're looking to spend a lot in January. We're already seeing a bunch of, you know, 40 mil here, 40 mil there. Deals going on in January, but like you said, man, teams like Mainz and Bochum can't do it because they're not going to spend the money.
Right.
And, yeah, man, I mean, Pep's the great example of, if you're not surrounded by elite talent, then you're just not going to be able to win. And does that say that Pep's a bad manager, or does it just say that his tactics takes the absolute best players to run what kind of system he does? So, I mean, the Pep is the greatest manager argument, I feel, is a little bit outlandish, just because everywhere he's gone has had billions of dollars to spend. And then you got guys, you know, like Klopp, where FSG won't spend money, or whoever this is kind of
head to the closing for this, but like, so Jeannie Wijnaldum specifically says here, listen, average player at Newcastle, no one thought much of him. Klopp buys him, and he says one of the key players in Klopp's success, and I just said that, I mentioned that, and he snubbed Tottenham in favor of Liverpool. Do you know why? I'll tell you why. He said, I had great conversations with both Pochettino and Klopp in 2016, but in my meeting with Jurgen, we had a laugh, and he did not speak to me only about football. He was interested in my personal life and what was good for me. He was not interested in Wijnaldum the footballer, but he was interested in Wijnaldum the person.
Yeah.
That, how much opposite of that is it to Jose Mourinho's approach? But then you look at the trophies that Mourinho has amassed, and you look at the success that Klopp has amassed. They're both A-plus, A-list managers, but radically different approaches in terms of man management. Also radically different approaches in terms of tactics.
Oh, big time, yeah.
So, but here's the thing I point to you, Nick, is the fact that the one guy that always gave Klopp problems was Carlo Ancelotti. Even at Everton. Even when he was at Everton, he gave Klopp. And Carlo, how do I say this? It is tactically is insanely basic compared to a Klopp or Amorim, or certainly a Pep.
Yeah, no, he really is.
So basic. Yeah. So basic. But look at Carlo's trophy chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's full, yeah.
So there, that's a guy that's almost like, I don't want to say anti-tactic, but...
They're so simple.
His man management, whatever Carlo does or says to his players in the dressing room or behind the scenes, his players buy into.
Yeah.
And
he gets the success.
So, I mean, and he was able to, through a low block and through counteroffensive football or anti-football even sometimes, was able to stifle Klopp's Liverpool.
Yeah.
He broke, that was like 23 years that Everton had not won an Anfield. It was like 20, they hadn't won in the 21st century. It was like 99 was the last time they won. Then they went 2021, they finally beat Liverpool at Anfield, first time in a quarter century. And Carlo Ancelotti was on the touchline. And if you look at it, just Carlo flustered Klopp as Real Madrid manager.
Yeah.
Time and time again. It wasn't until Slot took over, and now obviously Carlo's still there, but Slot beat the piss out of Ancelotti just a few months ago. But that's Slot, not Klopp. Klopp was flustered by him. It's the one guy that got into Klopp's hair. So I think man management, Nick, is the most important third out of all of them. I think how you treat your players, but more specifically, what messages your players respond to will make or break your team. You named Marcus Rashford as an example of a player with all the talent in the world that has never even come close to matching it.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, you get a manager that can deal with the players, you're going to have the success one way or another, because those guys are going to put everything out on the pitch for you, as long as you have the right players and are spending the right money, man. I mean, it's definitely definitely something you need is the man management. I feel that is probably number one. You're absolutely right. If you don't have that, then the other things, can't come in effect, man. If you don't have the man management, no one's going to listen to you for your tactics. No one's going to give a shit. So you got to have somebody who can actually tell those players what to do, and they actually listen. So agreed, man, that three-headed dragon, you gotta be able to tell the players what to do and them actually listen. Yeah.
Well, man, is there anything else you wanted to add on about it? I think we could, I mean, this is just, one of our episodes where you and I like to talk about a part of football that is critical to the game, but isn't a scoreline or a match from last weekend. And I think you and I enjoy, we love digging into the roots of the game, talking about past legends, past managers, what makes the innovations. And I do think that tactical innovations are going to be few and far between from this point moving forward, because there's just not much more you can do. You can, like I said, you can change the numbering system of the 10 outfield players to your heart's content. You can do a 10-0 if you want to, I guess a 10-0 or a 1-1-8-1 or whatever. But it's a matter of, like every tactical philosophy, Pep's, Jurgen's, Jose's, Ferguson's, going back to the, like I said, the Catenaccio days of Inter, those players had to buy into it. And man management is a way to do that. And I believe that man management, Nick, can even overcome lack of talent, because you can get a player who isn't the most talented player. Like, and I said, Diego Milito was by no means Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Yeah.
But he can add more value to your team by what you say to him and how you put him in position to either succeed or fail.
Yeah, you get your guys to go all out for you. You never know what the hell can be possible. I agree with you. You can get more out your players if you actually have them playing for you, put everything out on the line. It's just something I think about is when you relate it to, egg ball and basketball. I mean, you had something like the Wildcat come through. Where's the Wildcat now? I mean,
great example.
You'll have these you'll have these tactical changes and innovations come along, and then as soon as teams adapt, you can't do it anymore. You're not seeing, Miami Dolphins run this running back at quarterback running up the middle of the pitch or field anymore. You don't see it. But in football, it happens too. I mean, Juventus's manager the Bologna manager, I mean, hell, he can't win a game to save his life. He's drawing left and right. It seems that teams are figuring this stuff out. And then you have to change. I mean, it's a constant shift in what's being done. And the innovations can possibly not run out, but teams just figure it out quickly, man. I mean, look at the Wildcat. The NFL, that shit was shut down within a season, bro. I mean, Wildcat was ran. Bam, defensive coordinators are in their office all night figuring it out.
Here's where I think football tactics is now. This is where it's arrived. Much like the video we saw on Amarin versus Pep Guardiola, it's not about 4-3-3 or 3-5-2 or 3-4-2-1. It's about Silva slow. I'm going to take advantage of that. Rashford's erratic. Mbappe doesn't know how to stay onside. That's what you take. So Barcelona has fallen off of a cliff, but they beat Real Madrid at the Bernabeu 4-0.
Yeah, 4-0.
Because they said, we're going to expose the weakness of one player and the fact that we're going to set this offside trap, and Mbappe fell into it almost double-digit times, which is insane.
Time and time again.
But it's not about formations and lineups, Nick. It's about, you have 10 players in the outfield, and I have 10 players, and I'm going to pick out two that I'm going to run a truck through that I know are the weak spot on your team. And in this case with Amarim, he knew it was Bernardo Silva.
Yeah.
And for Pep Guardiola, I believe the approach for him was to attack, overload the midfield. So he was basically saying, okay, well, I don't fear their midfield, so I'm gonna bring Guardiola up. I'm gonna have a 2-man back line in the attack. And I'm gonna have a double pivot of Guardiola and Gundogan. And so that was, and now you got KDB and all, and it's like, you know, Man United's getting overrun in the midfield, right? So but for Amarim, he's like, my tactic is gonna be, I'm gonna exploit the space. So I know that Doku is gonna dribble himself out. And I know that Silva is not going to be able to get, so I can leave that part of the pitch open and put another defender to try to help overload that midfield imbalance that we have, because Silva's not going to get behind my back line. He's just not fast enough.
Yeah,
it's that, Nick. It's not about tactical approach in terms of, because you hear NBC, they love to say Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies, they got their tactics right. They got tactics. It's not about really tactics, Nick. It's about they picked the mismatch out correctly and they exploited it.
Yeah. And how did they react to the opposing manager's formation and tactics? You know, you got that too. I mean, Amarim just reacted to what Pep was doing and it worked. And
right.
You think could that have been his tactic, actually waiting to see what happens and what was open and doing it? Or did he just change it? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can think about it, because that could have been his approach, man, is do this, and then once we see what Pep's doing, we'll change it.
Think about this. What is it that Real Madrid, when they match up with Liverpool, with the exception of this past time, because Slot knew better, but Klopp fell into this trap every single time. Vinicius Jr. versus Trent.
Yeah.
Liverpool is every bit as good as Real Madrid, man for man, except one matchup.
Yeah.
The left wing, which is where Trent Alexander-Arnold is your right back.
Yeah.
And Vinny Jr., it's just God. It's good that he's joining them, because now the only place he can beat him is in practice. But that you know, like Allen Iverson,
you can't beat him, join practice. Him. Yeah.
But bro, we saw in the 2022 Champions League final that he got abused like I mean, it was Tina Turner and
Ike.
And Ike. Yeah. Dude, it was terrible.
Yeah. No, you're
not. Real Madrid's not doing something with Benzema. They're not doing something creative with this guy or that guy, or Carvajal's doing something with a yo-yo, like walking the dog.
Yeah.
It's not, dude. It's a matter of, hey, my winger's faster than your right back, and your right back's playing a high line, and I'm going to hit the long ball, and one of these times in the 90 minutes, he's going to get past him, and it's bye-bye Allison. And that's exactly what happened. It's not some tactical innovation by Carlo. It's not some genius. It's just saying, dude, that guy's slow as shit. He's playing high. Get past his British ass. This is easy. You're Brazilian. Get through there. That's exactly what happened. Tactics, honestly, man, can be as simple as that. It's an exploit of someone else's weakness.
Yeah, exploit the weakness.
And it can be one position, Nick, out of 11 on the pitch, just one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they went after that spot. And, I mean, it worked. They got the Champions League, you know. We saw it, and we talk about it all the time, man. Trent definitely was the exposed part of that game, and they went at it again and again and again. And you would think, you know, hey, Klopp, do something about it, change it, get them off or move them back. But that didn't happen, and we saw what happened in the end, man. So, yeah, you could definitely look at it that way, man. Tactics could just be find the weakness and exploit. I mean, it could be just as simple as that, man. There's a lot of focus on it.
This is your own point. I want to talk about this real quick before we go. You've said this before, too. We said it last night because you and I are topical, right? We're talking about stuff we talked about in the last 24 hours. You said if you were to build a team NBA, it'd be Jordan and Shaq would be second, right? Well, yeah. Shaq's the most dominant player in the paint ever. What's his weakness?
Well, you already know free throws
right. So if we're in a close game, is it tactical genius for me if I'm Phil Jackson as the Bulls head coach to say we'll just go hack him? Is that anything special? Does that make me the best coach since Red Auerbach? Really?
No.
Just to say put the guy who's shooting 52% from the line on the free throw line? That is not Carlos saying Vinny go beat Trent in a foot race is not a tactical genius moment. It's just saying you're a better athlete than him. Period. That's a human skill.
Yeah.
So I believe, Nick, that tactics are a little bit overrated. I think they're a little bit overrated. I think a lot of matches, especially when you have two power, why does City beat Prime City, not this year's City, but why does Prime City beat Bournemouth 4-0, but then they play Liverpool, they lose to Liverpool at Anfield 2-1? Well, I'll tell you why. Because City has a human advantage, a.k.a. more talented players at every single position from 1 through 11 than Bournemouth does. There's not a single player. So I don't even need the best tactical approach there. My footballing and skill of my players is going to get me over the line with that club, right? But Liverpool is different. Or in this, we could say Inter, Juve, whatever. Superstar teams, right? Teams that can spend money, that can put equal talent, if not better, on the pitch to match up with me on the chessboard, right? Now I got to figure out, well, hell, where's Juventus's weakness? What have I got to do now? Because that defense is tough. I got Bonucci back there. I got Chiellini. How am I going to get past that back four? You know, we got up front. We got what's my boy's name? That came from Bayern at that time.
For Juventus?
Yeah,
you're talking about Costa?
No. The striker. Bayern gave him up for
Mandzukic.
So you're looking at like where can we attack here, right? Where can we get our goal from? And so now you're looking at one-on-one matchups. You're looking at exploiting what the weakness is. And so I think that's why you see a lot of goals between these super clubs come in the second half, because the manager takes the entire first half to figure out where's the weakness. Where are we going to create from? And so, Nick, to your point, that you said on Sunday, you said, wow, no goals in the first half with United and Liverpool, 4 goals in the second half.
Yeah, no, dude, listen, my buddies who are listening now, who we talk all the time, I tell them when we make a bet or we say something and there's an over and first half is 0-0, I say first half is free. I say you get a pass the first half, because I've seen so many games go 0-0 at halftime and end up being 4-2. 2-2, 2-1. I always say, man, first half is free, because that's just the time where everybody's figuring everybody out. I mean, you might see one or two, but bro, the first half is always just mostly a chess match. Now, I'm not saying every single time is going to be a 0-0, but I say it all the time, man. You get a 0-0 game at halftime, chances of seeing a goal or two after halftime when they make those tactical adjustments is very high. That's a good point, man. I talk about that all the time. I said it yesterday with the Tottenham match. I mean, of course I was wrong. We saw one goal, but I said at halftime, I said, these managers are going to change everything up. We're going to see a goal or two. We saw one, I thought two, but bro, you're absolutely right. You can figure shit out, change your tactic at halftime, and then that second half could be absolutely lit. And we saw in the Liverpool match four goals in the second half because of some tactical changes and whatnot. So good point, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you that's why I'm saying I'm giving you, because you said it on Sunday. You're like, four goals in the second half because Amorim and it was – honestly, if you're looking at it as a neutral, I'm pissed because I'm Liverpool, we drew. But if you're looking at it as a neutral, that was such an exciting match of football, 2-2. In horrible conditions, but you're seeing now the chess pieces coming. It wasn't United didn't change the tactical philosophy. They simply exploited a weakness they saw. And you know, right now with Liverpool's fullbacks, that being Trent and Robertson, that they are not playing. They're having subpar. I mean, I don't know where Trent's been better this year than he was last year. Robertson's been completely terrible. The entire season he's been terrible. So, Andrew Robertson's been terrible this year. It's time to go. It's time to put old yellow Bonehead behind moves. The woodshed. Yeah. But my point in that is it's like you're not going to. Robertson was late getting to one of those goals for United. I think it was the 2-2 actually. And that's where you're looking to exploit those weaknesses, you know, and that's where it's not a tactics is not so much sometimes 11v11. Sometimes it's just 1v1 or 2v2. Yeah. Just to figure out how are we going to get our goal and what is their weak spot. It's evaluation. Are you as a manager able to evaluate and come up with the other team's weakness and then able to exploit it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I Liverpool and United match was definitely an exciting match as someone. You know, of course, I favor Liverpool and would like to see them destroy United. I told you that I missed out on so much content because United fans are going to celebrate the draw while Liverpool fans are pissed. So, yeah, that was a good example of kind of exploiting some of the weaknesses. I mean, Trent wasn't necessarily the best. I think Virgil was staring down Trent one time because he didn't go after a ball, was just ball watching, and Virgil had to save the team on one of those plays. So yeah, I mean Amorim, even though tactical they're not doing his formation, he just exploited those weaknesses, man. And the Liverpool match is a great example, man. And we got ourselves a masterclass. That was absolutely exciting to watch, but you know, in the end, man, that defending was shambolic for Liverpool. And you know, it goes to show you a team like Liverpool with such good management with Slot, you know, if they had Saliba and Gabriel in the middle, I mean, not saying get rid of Virgil or anything, but they would be unstoppable or your fullbacks. If you replace, you know, that fullback with someone else, you know, you could be looking at possibly running away. You know, you don't lose to Nottingham, you don't draw to United. Blah 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 blah. You know where I'm going with that. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of funny, man. A lot of people, a lot of channels, a lot of pundits can put a lot on the tactics, but we know that sometimes tactics could mean absolute shit.
Right. So. And let's be honest with ourselves. One of Liverpool's goals were simply because De Ligt had his hand in the air and the ball hit it.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with tactics. That is 1,000% human error.
Yeah, we said that before we started, then we hit record. I said, bro, you're one trip, one bad slide tackle away from tactics meaning absolutely nothing.
Right. Well, hey, man, literally. We could go on about this for hours, but we're going to call it here. So next week we will be back to our regularly scheduled program because this is the first week where all the leagues are back. Europe is on – this is going to be – it's as Nick would say, this weekend's going to be drunk. It's going to be matches in Germany. We kick it off with a super match with Borussia Dortmund at home. Can they keep their undefeated home league streak intact? They are undefeated at home in the Bundesliga this season. Can Xabi Alonso, 4 points behind, make a strike on Bayern with half the season left to go. It will start this weekend, which oddly, Nick, this is the second or third to last match day of the first half of the season. So that means Dortmund and Leverkusen will play the return fixture in late May or mid-May. So that could be pivotal too, because that won't be at the Bayer Arena. But I think Leverkusen's got to win this. I think that Leverkusen's got to win. I think that isn't Bayern playing Gladbach this weekend.
Yeah, Bayern.
Their arch nemesis, the one that always.
Yes, they're kryptonite. They have Gladbach the 11th, 12:30.
Okay, so there you go. So yeah, we'll be back next week with full slates, giving opinions on what happened. But yeah, we wanted to get this tactical analysis type of show out here because it's just it's always talked about.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
It's a hot topic. It's a keyword. And I feel like sometimes it's not so much about that. It's about the other elements that go into it. And you and I believe in that. And so we wanted to get that out there and talk about it.
Absolutely.
Well, anything else to say, Nick? Or are we going to close out the lights, turn them out here?
No, man. We're going to close it out. We'll catch you guys next week. We got a Champions League starting back up. We got a big show next week with football. We're going to cover all the leagues, all the matches. And yeah, we'll catch everybody on Twitter and all that good stuff, man. And yeah, man, Super Bowls this weekend's drunk. We'll see y'all for a big one next week.
Awesome. Everybody have a good week.
See ya. Caliente del sol que se te metió y no te deja aquí a Dani.